And we are back with another episode of the Kyle Anzalone Show, a bonus show this week because there is just so much going on, developing day by day. I wanted to come on and break down the latest updates and also get to some of the stories that have developed over the whole first week of the war and really try to analyze where we are now and where we might be going and just how catastrophic, how stupid, how unbelievably reckless and unnecessary that this war was. So the latest news, of course, is Trump demanding an unconditional surrender. We'll get into the U.S. mass murder of over 100 children in Iran, and the entire Middle East is on fire, and we'll be kind of breaking down what it means in individual countries and so on. So starting off here today with really the biggest news of the day, which is Donald Trump put out this post on his Truth Social this morning. Not even a real functioning social networking account. It's Truth Social that you have to go to get the latest updates for what's going on. But he writes, "There will be no deal with Iran except unconditional surrender. After that, and the selection of a great and acceptable leader, we and many of the wonderful and very brave allies and partners will work tirelessly to bring Iran back and from the brink of destruction, making it economically bigger, better, and stronger than ever before. Make Iran great again." This is absolutely unbelievable on so many different levels that this is being said by the president of the United States now. He has gone beyond just regime change. He wants utter capitulation from the Iranians, not just to remove the ruling government in power, but to be involved in the selection process for the next Iranian leader. Right? He wants a U.S. installed government over a country of 90 million people, right? Unbelievable hubris, unbelievable stupidity. But that is what the president of the United States is putting out there as U.S. policy. Now, the other big piece of this is he's not only announcing a regime change operation, which, you know, Donald Trump was opposed to when he was running. You know, he would say no more regime change wars. But when he actually talked about it, a lot of times what he was saying was no more nation building projects, right? Like the mistake wasn't necessarily that we went into these countries all the time, but how we acted once we got in. You know, we should have just got the people that we needed to get and then get out. But here he is talking about laying out that not only are we going to pick the next leadership, the next government of Iran, but then we're going to go and help our allies in the region, which are all being bankrupted right now by the war, all being bombed and will need to be rebuilt themselves from this war, that basically the United States is going to go in and is going to rebuild the country of Iran. This is an absolutely insane, stupid, unnecessary nation-building quagmire that Donald Trump has walked himself into for no reason whatsoever. This doesn't benefit the American people. It doesn't make us safer. It doesn't advance American foreign policy or interest in any way. You know, I'm seeing some people on the right, like Will Chamberlain, arguing that this is about establishing American primacy. But the Iranians were just independent. They were under U.S. sanctions. They were suffering before. You know, the Iranians really weren't challenging U.S. primacy. But now there will be states that can legitimately challenge the United States because we are depleting our military in a war we need not be involved in. We're expending all of our interceptors. When do you think is the next time that Taiwan is going to get a Patriot missile from the United States after this? After we had to spend the next decade just replenishing our own stockpiles, paying back the Europeans for all that we promised them that they've sent to Ukraine and are now giving to the United States. The same for the Japanese. We've taken their Patriots and promised to return them. So after all of that, then we'll start giving them out to countries like Taiwan again. So obviously, if you're looking at, you know, U.S. global ambitions and primacy and the ability to confront and stop, you know, other great powers. This is absolutely destroying the United States. Not that I advocate for it, but for people who do, this is absolutely disastrous. This war is a massive, a huge problem that Donald Trump has gotten us into. And now that he's demanding Iran's unconditional surrender on top of just the idea that this would be about taking out Iran's military, taking out their nuclear program, taking out their missile program, taking out their Navy, taking out their leaders. All of those things are foolish and reckless and unnecessary. But at the same time, at least they were things that Donald Trump could do and then, you know, declare victory and go home after some period of time. The idea that we have to install this new government is going to be a years, a decades long project. And of course, we'll never achieve it. We will end up losing a lot of Americans in this war. We'll end up spending trillions of dollars. We'll end up setting an entire region of the world on fire, maybe millions dead, you know, between Iran and the Mediterranean Sea from this conflict that Trump is unleashing here. But we will not get the unconditional surrender of the Iranians. Now, I should mention here that the White House press secretary, Caroline Leavitt, came out after and said that, well, what the president means is that there's not going to be any ability for Iran to resist the U.S. anymore. And so that will be an effective unconditional surrender. And Trump isn't actually asking for a formal unconditional surrender. So maybe that's a slight walk back from this position, but we really don't know what the U.S., what the Trump administration is trying to achieve in this war. And I'm not entirely sure that the White House actually doesn't have somewhat evolving ambitions. I think when they came out and said that, you know, we want to destroy the Iranian Navy, that's one of our goals. That's just because that was something achievable that they could put on a checklist and then they know they could check it off because the Iranian Navy isn't very big. They don't really have the capacity to defend their ships, as we've seen. And so those are just easy targets for the United States to destroy that Iran, again, has very little to no ability to defend. And then with the missile launchers, they're attacking U.S. soldiers. So that's a retaliatory thing. And they could claim that, oh, Iran's slowing down their pace of missile firing. So this shows that we're making progress there. But we really don't know what the U.S. is trying to achieve. And I'm worried that the White House doesn't actually have a firm set in stone policy, which is why we see everything incrementally increasing, where initially it's just a days long, a 2 to 4 day war that the United States is planning. Basically, we're going to knock out Iran's leadership, their nuclear program, their missile program, and then we're going to be in a position of strength when it comes to further rounds of negotiations. Iran will have a much more compliant leadership who will come to the table and agree never to enrich nuclear material again. But, you know, maybe that was the initial plan. Maybe it wasn't. Then, you know, we had this evolution to taking out the military and the naval sites, and they're bombing police stations. And now it seems that they are just carpet bombing. We've gone from talking about 1 to 2 weeks or 4 days to 1 to 2 weeks of operations. Now Pete Hegseth is publicly coming out and saying 4 weeks, 6 weeks, 8 weeks, or even longer. Politico, and we should get to this next, inside the Trump administration's scramble to support its own war, Politico reports U.S. Central Command, meanwhile, is asking the Pentagon to send more military intelligence officers to its headquarters in Tampa, Florida, to support operations against Iran for at least 100 days. That's 3+ months. But likely through September, according to a notification obtained by Politico. They are talking about waging this war through September. And I heard Professor Mohammed Mirandi today, of course, former guest, Mirandi today, the former guest of this show. He was on with John Kerouac, and he was explaining that Iran's plan is to fight this war through the 2026 midterms, which you know, people talked about it being a bad midterms for the Republicans before. If this war is going on in November, it will be a catastrophe for the Republican Party, probably beyond historical precedent in the United States of America. You know, one of the things that happened in this past week is both the House and Senate voted on war powers resolutions for this war, failed in both chambers. And so that isn't in any way an authorization for the administration to do force, use force, but it is a at least passive consent from Congress for this war to go on. And guess what? In the Senate, every single Democrat got to vote against it, and it still passed, right? So Chuck Schumer and all the other Democrats, they get their war against Iran, but when it comes to their next election, when they're running against the Republican challenger, they get to say, I voted against the war in Iran, and this guy was supporting the president's war, and this guy either voted for it or would have voted for it or whatever. And so this is going to be a huge political boost to the Democrats. And then in this House, it all broke down almost the same way. Rand Paul and Thomas Massey, I think maybe one other Republican in the House, there might have been two or three Republicans in the House that voted for the War Powers Act, are the only ones that will be able to say, I voted against what may be the you know, most disastrous American military conflict, even beyond Iraq, right? Since Vietnam is what we're looking at here, especially, again, if this war does continue as the Iranians apparently want, through November, the midterm elections. So speaking, and while we're talking about Congress, I do want to move on and hear what our House Speaker Mike Johnson has to say about the U.S. massive military operations against Iran.
Well, we just had an important series of votes on the House floor. As you know, the War Powers Resolution failed. That is the right result. We are not at war. We have no intention of being at war. The President and the Department of Defense have made this very clear. The Department of War has made it very clear. This is a limited operation. It's an operation that's limited in its scope and duration. It has a very clear mission, and that mission is nearly accomplished by all estimates. We are taking down Iran's ballistic missile capability, its stockpile, and its ability to produce more. They were doing that at a scale and a speed that was more than our regional allies could keep up with. And it was a serious and imminent threat to the United States. We don't need to relitigate all that today. But also, we wanted to take down the capability of their Navy, and all of that has been very successful. So this needs to continue. It would have been a very dangerous gambit to take the Commander-in-Chief's ability away to complete this mission. It would have been a very serious misstep by Congress, and I'm grateful that resolution failed.
This isn't a war. I don't know how the entire Middle East is burning. U.S. bases are on fire in Bahrain, in Kuwait, in Iraq. You know, U.S. embassies hit in the UAE, in Saudi Arabia, Israel hit, Iran, Tehran, carpet bomb night after night after night. This isn't a war? What? I mean, even the Soviets wouldn't have had propaganda like this. This is absolute insanity what our leaders are getting in front of us and telling us. I mean, this is so much beyond the propaganda of the Russian government calling the war in Ukraine a special military operation. They're trying, this isn't a war. It is a full-on regional catastrophe of a war. And he's trying to tell the American people that it's not a war at all. It's bad propaganda, but is the Speaker of the House, I mean, you know, this man is in the line of succession for President of the United States of America. He is one of the most powerful legislators in this country, and he is just getting in front of the American people and telling them we're not in a war. Oh, by the way, another part of this is Americans are coming back home in flag-draped caskets right now. They're not coming back. They're not welcomed into the arms of their loved ones. They are coming back dead because of this war. And for Mike Johnson to stand up there and say it would be irresponsible for Congress to constrain the president. No, it's irresponsible for Congress not to at least have the courage to vote on this war. Like Mike Johnson, if you are willing to, as we are seeing, our young men and women are dying, our armed soldiers are dying in this conflict, right? If you're going to let them continue to be in that conflict, put your name on it. Have a declaration of war, sign it, vote for it, and say that, yes, we are at war. We are willing to spend trillions of dollars and lose, you know, scores, maybe more, of our young soldiers in this conflict. If that's what you are willing to do, then say it. But don't cower behind and say, oh, we need to leave the president with his options and have the ability to fight back. Now, one thing I did catch in there that I think is an interesting omission, and we've heard this from Marco Rubio as well, so it must be something that, you know, U.S. intelligence is putting out there, and I'm guessing that's actually true, and that is they identified a problem that the situation, the ability for the United States to fight Iran was not going to get better in the short term. And this is because Iran was able to manufacture, develop offensive missiles faster than the U.S. and Israel can produce, manufacture, develop interceptors and missile defenses. I think Marco Rubio has said the ratio was around like 10 to 1 on offensive missiles Iran is able to produce versus defensive missiles. And you wonder if that's getting any better or if that's a sign that this conflict really isn't going to work out well for the Americans. If Iran, if they do have these underground missile cities, and I know that the United States and Israel are claiming that they wiped out 60% of Iran's missiles, I think at this point, if you look at what they were saying in June, Iran wasn't supposed to have hundreds of missiles at this point. And so the fact that the Iranians are still firing missiles suggests that the U.S. and Israeli intelligence on how vast Iran's missile stockpiles are either an underestimate, it's bad intelligence, or they're lying to us and the real numbers are actually far worse as far as it goes for the American soldiers in the region, that Iran is able to outproduce the U.S. on interceptors. And even if that's true at this point or close, again, massive problem for the United States. So I wanted to highlight that. Now, I want to move on and get more into the thinking in Tehran right now. This is an Iranian foreign minister doing an interview with the American press.
Hey, this is Bayard Winthrop, founder of American Giant. Back in 2011, I was fed up, sick of cheap disposable clothes that fell apart after a few washes, and even more sick of the fact that almost nothing good was made here anymore. So I started American Giant to prove something, that we could still make the absolute best hoodies, t-shirts, and pants right here in America, with American cotton, American factories, and American workers earning real wages. We exist to bring manufacturing home, create good jobs in towns that need them, and build clothes that actually last. No shortcuts, no overseas compromises. Get 20% off your first order when you use promo code GIANT20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off when you use code GIANT20 at American-Giant.com.
You're saying Iran does not want a ceasefire.
We are not asking for a ceasefire. And we don't see any reason why we should negotiate with the U.S. when we negotiated with them twice, and every time they attacked us at the middle of negotiations. So there is no request for a ceasefire by us, and there is no request for the negotiation with the U.S. From us. We have never sent any messages to them.
All right, so three important things here. One is just the inability of the host to comprehend that Iran isn't coming, right? That they are facing down the most powerful military in the world, and that they are not coming to the United States on their hands and knees saying, We will give you whatever you want. Please make it stop. We're done. You killed our leader. You've destroyed our military. We can't do this anymore. You have won. And he's saying, we don't want talks. We don't want a ceasefire. And the host just looks like he doesn't even know how to comprehend that information. Like he's like some AI computer that's got input that it just didn't have the ability to calculate for. Again, I think Iran has calculated that a short war is just a postponement. That if it's a short war, Israel and the United States will attack again in a few months, and they need to fundamentally change the situation in the Middle East in order to prevent a future American and Israeli attack. And I think that means, you know, inflicting massive damage on the U.S. and its partners in the Middle East, causing major economic damage to the Gulf Arab countries in the Middle East, and, you know, particularly changing the power dynamics between Iran and Israel. And that's not going to be achieved through a deal or a ceasefire. As he said, and this is really important to keep in mind, the Iranians were in talks with the United States just a few weeks ago. They were in talks with the United States at the beginning of the Trump administration, and those talks led to war. And it seems to a lot of observers, and I'm sure to pretty much everyone in Tehran, that the U.S. wasn't actually engaged in substantive diplomacy. It was a ruse to help the Iranians get the guards down, to try to give the U.S. time to put military assets in the Middle East, and then to kind of claim and disguise that as, oh, these are just Trump's negotiation tactics. So I don't think the Iranians are going to really see this war ending at the negotiating table in the short term, because again, that's just a postponement of the war to a future timeline. The fact that they would be willing and able to drag this out through November would again be absolutely massive and would change a lot of things, not only in the United States politically, but also in the Gulf. Again, when you look at these countries that are dependent on oil exports and foreign travel and things like, you know, tourism and people traveling through, and rich people from other countries having hotel or apartments and living there, that's all going to dry up very quickly. And so all these nations will be in extreme trouble from their very repressed minority populations. Now, before we get into like more big picture stuff, I did want to go and talk about what happened at the school. This happened on the first day of the strikes in Iran. There was a school bombed, and this article from Reuters, exclusive U.S. investigation, points to U.S. likely responsible in Iran school strike, sources say. And, you know, there's a lot of speculation that this was Israel. The people who are just out to support Israel in the United States, the MAGA crowd, the Zionists, they were saying, oh, this was an Iranian missile. Either it was a misfire or they intentionally blew up their own school for the propaganda. Quickly, you know, it appeared that the U.S. was striking in that area, so probably not an Iranian misfire. It probably was the United States or Israel. But as more evidence comes out, not even Israel, it's actually the United States. And I know this has been covered a lot, but one thing that I really wanted to try to point out and hammer home to the American audience about this is there is now a cemetery in Iran with 168 graves. Over 100 of those graves are small, are filled with caskets of 7 to 12 year olds. And that cemetery will exist in Iran forever. And forever, when Iranians see that, they will think of the evil that America did to them in this surprise attack, in this attack when Iran presented no threat to them, in an attack that killed the leadership of their country and hundreds of other civilians, that started a war that burned the entire region and their country to the ground. They will see that, and they will hate Americans for it. And look, if it was the other way around, Americans would feel the same way about Iranians. And this will last for generations. That cemetery will be a symbol of how evil the American Empire is, how cruel and unnecessary and awful this war was, and will not only, I think, probably be used to kind of nationalize Iranians and have them rally around the flag and to have an enemy and an evil to oppose, a true evil, right? A cemetery full of children is proof to everyone that there is a real evil to fight against, right? This is going to be just, it's going to be rally around the flag, but also just true hatred for the Americans and the Israelis coming out of this. So, you know, we can't do any more of this. We have to get out of the war. We can't have another cemetery full of Iranian children who died at the hands of the American Empire. This cannot be allowed to continue and to go on in this way. So next up here, I have this clip. Chris, I actually want to go out of order here. Sot number four. This is the Piers Morgan show, where some of the panel, Peter Beinhardt and a former IDF spokesman, are discussing the destruction of this school.
And now it turns out it was friendly fire from a Kuwaiti pilot who mistook them for Iranians. So I just think we need to get to facts before you
declare. I know, Pierce. I understand what you're saying.
This was definitely an Israeli missile.
Pierce, even if it was an Iranian missile that was fired in response to the attack from Israel and the United States, right? Even if it was an Iranian missile, those girls would still be alive today if the United States and Israel had not launched the attack. So you are right. We don't know who launched the missile, but we know that if the US and Israel had not attacked a country that poses no serious threat to them, Israel has hundreds of nuclear weapons, America has thousands, that those girls would be alive.
Okay, but I would also say to that is indisputable. Let me finish my point. Matt, let me just make the point. You're probably going to make the same point.
You would be alive and in a burqa. That the idea that our bombs, by taking the lives of those little girls, liberated them from their oppression, is maybe the sickest, most demented reaction that I have heard to this war. However, it is fairly, you do see it out there among the MAGA crowd as they are trying to justify how this war is supposedly bringing freedom to the Iranian people by mass murdering them. And in just unbelievable ways, like the bombing of a school while it is in session, right? It's one thing to bomb a school when it's, you know, classes are canceled, war has been going on. I mean, it's horrible, it's bad, but to do it in the opening round of a surprise attack when it's literally full of children is the worst imaginable crime that can be committed, is blowing up a school. I maybe blowing up a daycare would be the only way you could even conceivably make this worse. And the U.S. did that. And they justify it by saying those little girls would have been wearing a burqa. So what? That's their religion. They wear a burqa. That's the way they live their lives, right? If somebody blew up a synagogue and said, oh, well, they would have all been wearing yarmulkes, that's not proof that you liberated them from oppression. It's just a very bad and sick justification for mass murder. All right. Next up here, back to the NBC interview with the Iranian foreign minister, Chris, sot number three.
Clarity. So for clarity, you said that you're missiles cannot reach the United States by design, that you do not want to reach the United States, but you also said it would be necessary as a defensive vehicle that you could if necessary. So to be clear, are you committing that Iran is not and will not build missiles that would have the capability to reach the United States?
I can confirm, yes.
Sir, if that's a red line for you, why is attacking U.S. military bases abroad justified?
All right, so pause it there. There is a school in Iran full of children that was just blown up by the U.S. military. And this lady is asking why the Iranian military has the right to attack the bases that facilitated the mass murder of Iranian children. How could anybody even think to ask that question? Even if that didn't happen and it was just a U.S. attack on Iran and they were just hitting military targets and they were just hitting the leadership, of course Iran is going to strike back against U.S. military bases in the region, and they have every right to. I'm not happy about it as an American. I don't want our soldiers in danger, but this is war, and at war, you strike the other side's military bases. But particularly when the war is this unjustified and this horrific, there should be no question that Iran is going to strike the military bases. So that's what I had for that clip. I did want to touch on this subject just on one more thing. This article from the Washington Post, Anthropic's AI tool Claude, central to U.S. campaign in Iran amid bitter feud. And what they explain in this article is, in order to strike a blistering 1,000 targets in the first 24 hours of its attack on Iran, the U.S. military leveraged the most advanced artificial intelligence it ever used in warfare, a tool that could be difficult for the Pentagon to give up, even as it severs ties with the company that created it. So the first thing I just want to mention here is we should all really question if the strike, if the bomb that hit that school, if that building was picked as a target, was AI involved in that command chain? That I think this is why Anthropic doesn't want their AI used by the Pentagon, but or guarantees from the Pentagon won't be used for this purpose. But I do wonder that question there, and also what it would mean if the Pentagon actually had to sever ties. But the use of widespread use of AI targeting, we've seen Israel do this in Gaza. Of course, you know, they just change how the algorithm works and generate a new list of targets. This is effectively just a way to have an excuse to blow up every single building in Iran. Is claiming, oh, the AI, the computer said that, you know, this building is likely used by the Iranian military. It identified the car traffic or the cell traffic or whatever else. And we think that there's a bad guy in this building, so we had to blow it up. And they just add targets to the list for that reason without any actual looking into it or surveillance. So before I end the show today, I did want to talk about how this is this war is going, how it's expanding, how it's impacting the greater Middle East. The first thing I have here is an article from CBS News. Arab states running dangerously low on interceptors to take down Iranian-fired missiles. They explain, Arab states in the Persian Gulf are running dangerously low on interceptors to take down Iranian-fired missiles, two regional officials told CBS News. Governments in the region have asked the U.S. to expedite new supplies, and they've been told that Washington is working on creating a task force to do so, but it isn't happening as fast as needed. And so I think this is a sign that Washington, of course, doesn't have an endless stockpile of interceptors. I mean, I saw this right before I went on the show. There was a post from the White House where they use the infinite ammunition cheat in GTA 5 or 6 or whatever, and as an equivalent to what the United States is doing in Iran. Hopefully they don't believe that. Hopefully that is just communist propaganda, like dirty propaganda that we shouldn't believe. But if there is a sense that they do believe that, they're going to have a very real reality come forward as Iran continues to fire more and more and more missiles and the U.S. interceptor stockpiles are draining. If we did have infinite ammo, an endless supply of ammunition, then we would just be giving these interceptors to countries that have invested trillions of dollars in the United States of America with the understanding that in times of war, if they needed it, the U.S. would help come to their defense, supply them with interceptors, especially if it's in a war started by the United States of America. They allow the U.S. to put their bases in their countries for this reason. And so if we're not providing Qatar and the UAE and the Saudis and the Kuwaitis and the Bahrainis with more interceptors, it's because we don't have a lot in our stockpiles. Further evidence of this is they're bringing the THAAD interceptors out of South Korea, which is creating some political tensions with Seoul. The South Koreans really didn't want those interceptors there in the first place. It really upset the Chinese at the South Koreans that they let the United States put those radars and systems on the Korean Peninsula. But South Korea agreed to it, thinking that, hey, if conflict ever breaks out with the North Koreans, at least these THAAD interceptors will be here. But up, now they're gone. They're shipped off to the Middle East for Donald Trump's needless war against Iran that is going to be catastrophic for the United States of America. So big point here, West U.S. running out of interceptors. My guess is that they're using every bit of leverage that they have with the Koreans, with the Japanese, with the Europeans, with the Canadians, with the Australians, to get them to give whatever they're willing to give up to the United States. They're going to already, many of these countries are bled dry by the war in Ukraine. So it's not like they have vast stockpiles, that this is, you know, a well-prepared army for a possible conflict. That's not the case in Europe or among our allies. And so they're going to have a real issue when it comes to interceptors and their stockpiles there. Now, as we kind of expand, we talk about the Iranian missiles for a minute. Things are not looking good in Israel. Iranian missiles are getting through, and it appears Iran has at least started to deploy some of their more advanced missiles. We've seen these munitions. I'm not 100% sure what they are. I've seen them described as multiple warhead missiles or cluster munitions. And I mean, effectively, they're doing the same thing. It's one missile that goes up, explodes into multiple explosives, and comes down. I guess if they were multiple independent reentry vehicles, that would be a far more advanced munition than if it was just one missile exploding into several smaller explosives. The evidence I've seen that they are actually the MIRV type missiles, the more advanced kind, is that they do appear to be burning even after separating from the main missile, which, whatever it is, it's a very impressive and seems to be very effective at evading Israeli air defense systems. And so the videos from Tel Aviv are rough. There is a lot of destruction going on there. I guess the Israelis are spending a lot of time in their bunkers because the Israeli government is not reporting a lot of casualties going on with the destruction. So, I mean, that's good. Less death is a good thing. But there are certainly people turning up injured in Israel. And a part of this appears to be from the fighting going on with Hezbollah. So this is one way that this war has predictably expanded. Is, turns out, Hezbollah wasn't completely beaten by the Israelis, and they are still a somewhat effective and competent fighting force. And so they have started firing missiles and rockets over the Israeli border. Israel responded by ordering the evacuation of, I believe, all Lebanese south of the Litani River. And I actually have a map here that maybe we could pull up quickly so people could just see this, just so you have an idea. So Lebanon, south of the Litani River, is about roughly like the bottom, I don't know, I would say 10% of the country or so. And that is the territory of Lebanon that Israel, that Tel Aviv, that the greater Israel folks in that country really covet. And they have now ordered all the Lebanese out of that region. They're also heavily bombing Beirut, particularly the southern suburbs, which are primarily Shia. And it does not seem that these attacks are particularly targeted. It seems large 1,000-2,000-pound bombs hitting residential areas, places where people don't have bomb shelters to flee to. Reports of 250 dead already in Lebanon, and that fighting started just a few days ago. Now, there were some casualties on the Israeli side, including the son of Israeli finance minister Bezalel Smotrich, who was injured in fighting with Hezbollah somewhere in northern Israel. So next up here, I want to mention the Kurd situation in Iraq. This is a tweet from Natasha Bertrand. She's one of the kind of deep state authors at CNN. And what she reports is that the CIA is working with the Iraqi Kurds. And I guess they're wanting to send them into Iran because there's a small percentage of the Iranian population, about 10%, that is Kurdish. Now, you know, I think there's a tendency to look at the Kurds as a monolith. And as we saw from the war in against the Islamic State and the Syrian war and the insurgency in Turkey, that this isn't really the case, that the Iraqi Kurds are very independent from the Syrian and the Turkish Kurds and really have their eyes on an independent Iraqi Kurdistan. And from the public statements from the Iraqi Kurds, from the Peshmerga, they have said that they are uninterested in getting involved in any military operations in Iran. Now, there are some Iranian Kurdish militias that do take refuge in Iraq. I don't know the extent to which this has happened, but it does appear that there have been a few Iranian attacks on those, again, Iranian Kurdish positions, not Iraqi Kurdish positions. So I speculate here that Tehran has actually reached out and kind of has a deal with the Iraqi Kurds to not fight them. And the Iranians have told the Iraqi Kurds that they are going to strike the Iranian Kurdish targets. And I guess the Iraqi Kurds were okay with that. So I think that's what's gone on here. Now, with this reporting from CNN, I think what they're trying to do is create anxiety in Tehran that the CIA is working on and moving forward with this program in hopes that Iran will go ahead and strike the Iraqi Kurds or the Iranian allies in Iraq, the popular mobilization forces, will strike the Iraqi Kurds and then provoke the Iraqi Kurds to go forward and become America's proxy force in Iran. I don't think it's going to work, but I do think this is kind of a deep state play here. That's why Natasha Bertrand had this story. That's why this was published in CNN and wasn't a typical covert CIA action. That is my hope, at least. If Netanyahu, the CIA, and Trump get their way, and the U.S. does end up backing the Iraqi Kurds as they go into Iran, I think that's very possibly going to kick off a civil war in Iraq. You know, the Iraqi forces right now are threatening. This is the popular mobilization forces. They're Shia militias that were formed in part by the IRGC and the Iranian general Qasem Soleimani to fight against the Islamic State. So they are very pro-Iran, and they are allied with Tehran. They are threatening to start attacking American bases in Iraq and embassies around the region in response to what Israel is doing to Hezbollah and kicking all the Lebanese out of southern Lebanon. And they certainly would get involved in the fighting if Iraqis were fighting against the Iranians. And so this could very quickly and easily turn into a major conflict. The last country that I should know, Kuwait here, has been getting pounded. U.S. bases in Kuwait getting hit very hard. But in Bahrain, I've noticed a lot of video coming out of that country. It seems to be one of the most vulnerable to Iranian missiles. They could probably hit them with the short-range missiles and drones very quickly. The U.S. Fifth Fleet was based there, so that base has been hit hard. But when these sites are hit, the Bahraini people are celebrating. They're jumping and cheering. They are not upset that their country is under attack from the Iranians. And I think the reason for that is it's a slightly minority Sunni population that rules and oppresses a majority Shia population. And you know, of course, Iran is a Shia country. And so in some ways, when those drones are coming in, they see it as help from liberators getting rid of the American and Sunni oppressors. And during the Arab Spring in the early 2010s, Bahrain was one country where the Sunni government was actually almost overthrown by a Shia uprising, and it was only with Saudi intervention were they able to kind of hold up and to stay, you know, in power and continue to maintain that support. And so you wonder if there could actually be some blowback here in the very immediacy where we don't actually get the regime change that we want in Iran, but there ends up being a regime change in Bahrain, and the new government probably wouldn't be so happy and willing to station the Fifth Fleet there in the future. Guys, I think we are looking at a huge monumental shift in how geopolitics work and the standing of the American empire and the future of the Middle East. And we don't know how it's all going to unfold yet. It's going to depend on how many missiles the Iranians had to fire, how many interceptors the U.S. has, Iran's combat power. But if this war dreads on, it is going to fundamentally change the Middle East and the world. And I hope you guys will be here with me to break it all down and to try to understand it, to ask questions. I'm some great experts on these questions. I will have more great guests coming up next week. So be sure you are subscribed to the show. Follow me on at @KyleAnslone_. And we'll be back with another show Monday at 4:45 Eastern. Thanks, everyone.